Live from the Bookhouse in Long Branch, New Jersey, it's the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more. And I'm very excited to be doing my first live recording of this podcast. This is close to our 150th episode, and I've done all of them in the privacy of my own home. And now I'm in public, and there are people around me, and it's making me very nervous. I haven't left my house since March of 2020. It's my first time I've left, and I'm very happy to finally be out of quarantine. But seriously, folks, this is a live recording, and it is part of a festival of Book and Film Globe content that we're doing at the Bookhouse, both in Long Branch, New Jersey, and in Millburn, New Jersey. These are bookstores that are owned by Sea of Reeds Media, which is the parent company of our podcast and of Book and Film Globe. And we have had excellent shows this week. We had a stand-up comedy night. We had a variety night that included a young man playing a ukulele and singing a song in the style of Django Reinhardt about Franz Kafka's The Trial. Huge hit. It was very popular among the thousands of people who attended the event. And we're doing this podcast recording. We're having a musical performance here on Saturday in conjunction with our sibling site, Rock and Roll Globe. I'm doing a reading of selected works. I've written a dozen books, and I'll be reading from several of those. And it's all part of a celebration of Book and Film Globe, a site that you know and love, both from this podcast and from the amazing articles that we publish nearly every day. And I'm so excited to be presenting it to a live audience. Not surprisingly, our first guest is our most frequent guest. Stephen Garrett, Hello. Our chief film critic, is here with me, sitting next to me on a couch. I don't think I've ever sat next to you
on
a couch.
It's wonderful.
I met you once in public.
We have a pillow between us, though.
Yeah, that's true. Not for long, Stephen. Not for long.
If this goes right.
Not for long. Yeah. I met you once at a bar in Manhattan.
I think a couple times.
Maybe a couple. I think once for sure. Once I
It was deliberate. You make it sound like we just...
We didn't just run into each other. We made plans. I mean, we've been working together for years. You've reviewed hundreds of movies for us, and you've been on this podcast many times, and now you're live here.
I am.
It's a beautiful bookstore.
Oh, it's gorgeous. I love this bookstore.
Yeah, they just
opened it. I literally just bought a book.
Right, you bought my book.
I bought your book.
My book, Pothead. But the Bookhouse in Long Branch, New Jersey, it's brand new. They just had. We're talking in mid-April, and they just had their grand opening last Thursday, and it's right here. And you can actually, if we look behind us, we can actually see the ocean. And this place is going to be full of humans in June.
This literally has beach reeds in it. This is going to be great for the summer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a beach right outside.
You can literally buy a book and then walk to the beach and read it.
There's a carousel right behind us.
That's really lovely.
It's not currently operating.
And there's an ice cream place just down.
Right. So there's going to be lots of people with the suntan. They still call it suntan lotion? Covered in lotion.
I call it Bain de Soleil. However that translates.
For that Saint-Tropez tan.
Just colored oil.
Stephen and I are just going to sit here and banter and make beach jokes for the next 20 minutes. Actually, we're not. We're going to talk about a very controversial, I would say this is a controversial movie, if there is such a thing anymore, the movie Civil War.
This place is so weird. It's a twilight zone.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on?
Sure.
Look at the tops of the buildings.
We're just passing through. We're American.
What kind of American are you?
We're going to D.C. before anyone else does. That's the job.
Go, go, go! You're so close.
It's directed by Alex Garland, who is the director of many films, including 28 Days Later.
No, he didn't direct that. He wrote it.
He wrote that.
That was his first kind of notable
Danny script. Boyle directed that. Yeah, yeah. And then he directed Ex Machina.
He directed and he wrote and directed. Ex Machina was his debut as a writer-director.
Last year he had a movie called Men, which was kind of a weird...
That was very weird.
...avant-garde folk horror thing starring Jesse Buckley.
That's right.
Civil War is a much more mainstream film.
I would say it's his most conventionally directed film.
Yeah, but this movie is controversial because it presents a scenario. It's not about an actual civil war that's taken place. It's an alternate history, future history of the United States in which the country has been torn to shreds by a civil war. So I have some thoughts about the politics of this movie. But before we get into all that, let's talk about it as like an aesthetic object, which, after all, it is. It's a film, right? It is a work of art, in some way. And you know, I actually thought that I have a like I said, I have a lot of problems with the content of the movie. But I thought like as a movie, I thought it was nice and taut,
right?
And there's no flashbacks. Well, there's one flashback sequence.
She has a couple.
Yeah,
Lee Miller. Lee Smith.
Lee Smith is the name. Is the name of Kirsten Dunst's character. She's a photojournalist, a war journalist, and she's traumatized, as most war journalists are. And she has flashbacks to other conflicts she's covered in other countries. And so you see that. There's an early scene where she's taking a bath in a hotel.
Right.
Which is not as sexy as it sounds. But she's having flashbacks. But then after that, the movie is like a straightforward road trip where she and some other journalists travel from New York City to Washington, D.C., where the rebels in the Civil War are basically going to assassinate the president. Mm. That's the whole thing. And it's very point A to point B to point C. Like there's not it's very kind of gritty,
right?
So I appreciated that. Like I was never bored,
right?
At all.
That's good.
I mean, I was not bored, and I thought that a lot of the battle scenes. There's a lot of battle scenes were very. How should I put it? They were they're visceral, right? You know, there were needle drops, and they were kind of annoying, but they weren't slow motion, you know, battle scene needle drop. Like the battle scenes felt very like you were in the shit.
Right. So, exactly.
And none of the main characters ever picked up a gun.
No.
They all had cameras.
No, they had cameras. Yeah, that's right.
So I don't know. So do you agree with my sort of aesthetic assessment?
I think you get at the heart of why Alex Garland's movies work as well as they do, which is as aesthetic pieces. They have these images, they have these moments, and he sets a mood that is incredibly indelible. Like Men, I don't think was a very good movie, but I keep thinking about some of the images, especially at the end when the dude gives birth to himself like three or four times in a row.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in every movie.
Does it really?
No.
It does not. Annihilation has some really amazing things. He never really sticks the landing when it comes to the end of his movies. But it's very much a thought piece, like I think, or conversation piece. You know, you say controversial, I would say more conversational. And for me, that's what I find movies are a conversation more than anything. Like even bad movies, if you make something that has at least an iota of something that's worth talking about, which is hopefully the reason they made the movie to begin with, then I think there's something worthy there. So this is a worthy conversation topic. I don't think it necessarily works, and we'll talk about that.
Well, look, you and I had a 20-minute conversation about Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire. So when it comes to our show, any movie is a conversation piece. But I think this movie actually is worthy of a conversation because, you know, the idea that America is going to descend into a second civil war, this doesn't take place 100 years from now.
Right.
This is like now.
Well,
to the point where, like, as someone else mentioned, none of the characters even have cell phones.
Right.
You know, it's like, they're watching, where there is TV, they're watching CNN.
Yeah.
It's now. And so what's the point of making a movie about America descending into civil war? Does Alex Garland really think that America is on the verge of civil war? And I think the answer is
Maybe.
And you know, I was thinking about it. Like, what movie does this remind me of the most? And the movie that kept coming back to me over and over and over again was the 1980s Red Dawn. You laugh. But 1980s Red Dawn was a kind of a paranoid right-wing thriller about what would happen if the Soviet Union invaded Idaho.
No, it's true. Look, and I watched the beginning of it fairly recently on cable. I caught it, and because I still have cable, and I appreciate cable. I like it.
Cable TV?
Yeah, cable television.
Yeah.
For the serendipity that it offers, like watching the first 20 minutes of Red Dawn in the middle of the night.
Sure.
But that, like Civil War, has an image at the beginning which is just surreal and strange. You see these Soviet troops parachuting down onto a football field.
In a high school,
and they just start massacring people. Yeah. Like crazy.
Yeah, and that was a fear. That was a legitimate fear that a lot of Americans had.
Right.
At the time, you know, you were alive in the 80s. I was alive in the 80s. I went to see Red Dawn. You know, the thing that Red Dawn had that Civil War doesn't was, like, you know, sexy teenagers.
Right.
Patrick
Kaylee Spaney's in this. Kaylee Spaney you know,
is I suppose...
She's not played to be sexy.
She's not played to be sexy.
No,
she's
nothing sexy she's, about photojournalism.
I mean, well, I don't know. Right, I mean, there was a way to do it. But this movie, I think... Well, the reason I mentioned Red Dawn is because I feel like... there is a sort of paranoid fantasy among liberals,
right?
That if Donald Trump is elected again,
right,
the United States will descend into massive civil conflict. And I feel like this movie, Civil War, is an absolute projection of that fear.
Oh, I think
of that neurosis, because yeah. I don't think this is a projection of a neurosis of what happens. Because even you mentioned when I was texting with you about it, you were like, "Well, if Trump seizes power again," and I'm like, "He's not going to seize power. He might be elected again. I don't think he will." But that's the idea that, you know. If I may quote from my Facebook feed, because I wrote a review of Civil War on the website, and I posted the review, and I was talking about it both as sort of aesthetically and politically, and this guy who, I don't know, went to high school with my sister, he's some guy who lives in LA, and he says, "Spoiler alert, I would argue that this movie is far from apolitical and that the filmmakers definitely take a position. The backstory is clear. Trump wins in 2024 and sticks around in 2028. This is finally too much even for today's Republicans. Traditional Reds, Texas, team up with Blues, California, to take back the White House as the Western Forces are the rebels in this movie, in, say, 2030. There's significant historical precedent, by the way, where American Reds and Blues work together to stop fascism. It's called World War II. I'm like, what are you talking about? But I was saying, but you know, and this guy, like, and it goes on and on and on about how, you know, referring to people getting fed up and assassinating the Clown King.
Right.
And I'm
right.
like, and he goes on and on. And it's like, I'm like, okay, obviously this is in this guy's brain.
Right.
Why else would he post like a 300 word response on Facebook to a movie review that I wrote on
right.
a website?
Right.
So I'm just like, so to me, like, this is an interesting film. I disagree with the premise. I don't think we're headed for a civil war. I don't.
Right.
I mean, I live in Texas. It doesn't. There's not. I don't feel the ferment. I don't feel it except for on Twitter.
Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, you know, I don't think we're necessarily headed towards this, but I do think that it's been difficult for people to imagine what a civil war might look like in this country, and this movie does that. By
it does.
Creating different scenarios, like having Texas and California team up
with Florida,
Florida is part of the Florida, Southern secessionist states, or
the
something
Florida
like that.
Alliance,
the Florida Alliance,
the Western forces,
which is basically the Southern states,
and they're fighting like what the Eastern they're fighting like the East Coast.
Well, no, the Union stretches from Arizona to Maine, so there's this long like swath right through the middle of
there's a lot of references.
Alaska's
what's Alaska?
Neutral. Which I think is pretty funny.
That's good. It's a place. It's a place you can still go on vacation, I guess, during the Civil War. So my question is, like, there's a lot of references
right.
in the film to, like, Kaylee Spaney's characters from Missouri.
That's right.
And Kirsten Dunst's characters
Colorado.
From Colorado.
Yep.
Real America.
Parents apparently both live on farms.
They live on farms.
Both of them.
Yeah. Who lives? Not that many people live on farms in America anymore. But the parents of these two, you know, attractive photojournalists do. I guess there's just something. There's something about farm life that makes you want to take pictures of civil conflicts. So, but there's a lot of references to how people in the middle of the country are just ignoring everything that's going on.
Well, I mean...
Oh, those ignorant rubes who don't want to get into a shooting war in suburban Pittsburgh.
I don't think it's even that. I think there's a certain amount of, we want to stay out of this. This is not bordering us, you know.
I don't blame them. It looks awful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to, I mean, I'm staying home.
Well...
I'm staying home and watching TV.
I think what Alex Garland is doing...
I don't want any part
and
of this.
He's the last person to say this is an apolitical film. He said he said in interviews, it's a very political film. No, he says it's a very political film.
Oh, yeah.
The guy's a fascist. He's suspended, you know, the Constitution enough so that he can have a third term. He's disbanded the FBI. He's fired on civilians.
And who does that sound like to you?
Look...
Joe Biden? I don't think so.
Well...
You know, Barack... You know.
I think... I think what's interesting about what's happened over the past 8 years is that, regardless of whether it was Trump or not, that the ground has been softened for a party like the Republican Party to...
Or the Democratic Party.
Or the Democratic Party.
Or a party.
Frankly, any party can be co-opted. They can be co-opted and pushed to extremes in a way that I think people did not think was possible. You know what I mean? And become kind of supine to whatever... The leader is saying or doing to the point where they're like, well, I didn't read his tweets, so you know.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm like, I'm not a political journalist. You're not a political journalist. No. We are.
Let me tell you, who's not a political journalist? Who? Anybody in this movie in Civil War? Because for a movie that's supposed to celebrate journalism, there is no reporting going on in
right.
this movie.
It like, would help if they helped put it into context.
The photojournalists, you see them taking pictures, but the other guys, do you really see them interviewing people?
Right.
You kind of maybe in the background during a montage.
No, they're just assholes.
They're kind of like jerks and snarks. Like
yeah,
the
photojournalists I get. Like, what are you going to do? You know, they're capturing images of violence.
Yeah,
but like the guy. The Wagner Moura, this actor who's kind of like,
right.
he's like an inexpensive Pedro Pascal.
His character's
clone.
Like Joel, I think.
Joel
from Florida. But he was like, look at that firefight. It gets me hard. And you're just like, yeah. what?
He's a bad character. I mean, if only he had been interviewing people and they could explain to
that
them.
That would be nice. And the thing is,
journalists don't have to do that.
Yeah, and I don't think it would reveal the whole story. It would reveal different dimensions, the human dimension, as to what war does to a community.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was kind of interesting when they went into that town and the girl just said, you know, that behind there's a shopkeeper who says, we just want to stay out of this.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there is a certain amount of
And then he says, don't you guys know there's a pretty big civil war going on in America right now? I'm like, yes, because that's the movie we're watching.
He's like a snarky hack journalist.
Yeah.
Like, I wish he could have been a more interesting journalist. Like the Stephen Henley,
McKinley Henderson.
Yes. Who plays Sammy, I think.
Yeah.
He was a journalist for what's left of the New York Times.
Right.
So the thing is, I think you're thrown little bits like what's left of the New York Times or Reuters. There are things that are still familiar. Weirdly enough, there are no cell phones, which I think could have been something that people had mentioned in a way like, you know, he destroyed
like
all the cell towers or he took over Verizon.
I feel like that would be the last thing to go.
Well, no, it might be the first thing to go if you really want to control
And there were no restaurants.
And there,
there's no restaurants.
You can buy a ham or cheese sandwich for $300 American.
$300 Canadian.
No, American dollars.
Oh.
Canadian, you can get gas.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
that was another thing I love, too. I love that Canada finally has good currency.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought it was a compelling movie, and it's doing very well.
Well, it's doing very well, and it's also apparently split evenly among red and blue states and people who profess themselves to be... You know, Democrats or Republicans.
I'm telling you, people are pretending like it's an art film, but it's actually Red Dawn. Red Dawn 2024,
well,
Civil War.
All right, I do want to interject and say, I think what's interesting about this movie, it's not the beginning or the middle. This is the end of
the
reign of this tyrant.
The tyrant.
And I think what it's doing
President,
is showing...
President Ron Swanson.
Yeah, President Ron Swanson. It's showing the exhaustion that happens, you know, when a country is at war with itself and that strife, and the fact that there's a moment where the journalist actually is doing some journaling and he's asking, you know, that guy who's shooting at the sniper, trying to, why are you shooting at him? And he just says, because he's shooting at me. That there is this fog of war that has now taken over and is kind of degraded to the point where it doesn't even matter what people's politics are. They're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate showing that. And I think what he's trying to do is he doesn't want to get mired down by the politics. He wants to have this be a warning, the way that Christian Dunst's character says, I thought I was sending these photos back as a warning to make sure this never happens here.
You know? I know.
I kind of like that. I get it.
I still find the very existence of this film annoying. That's what it comes down to. Is like, I'm like, what are we doing here? There's not going to be... Everyone chill the fuck out. There's not going to be a civil war. Enjoy your summer. Enjoy your fall. Enjoy your life. Don't worry. But this is not going to happen.
So you're saying this is a doom scroll. This is like a cinematic
doom scroll. This is a cinematic doom scroll for permanently traumatized liberals. Yes. The fact that conservatives are enjoying it is because there's lots of guns in it.
Oh, I mean, I think you're being reductive on both sides. I think there's some interesting things to talk about.
So be it. So my house in Austin is the first one to fall when the Civil War comes. I'm not wrong. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
I'm right. That said, it's worth seeing because like we've had I've had several conversations like this about the movie since it came out, and it unlike Godzilla X Kong, it does not feature King Kong whipping a baby monkey around and hitting people in the head. But it's got everything else you could want in a movie. All right, Stephen Garrett, thank you so much. Thank you for being here
at the
Bookhouse, for coming all the way out to the Jersey Shore.
It's my pleasure. You got to keep the union together, man. That's why.
Well, yeah, but what part of the country would this be part of the fascist part?
I had the highways were vaporized. I had to go all the way to Western Pennsylvania.
You had to drive through West Virginia to get
Charlottesburg, and then come up to Jersey. That's what
kind of an American are you, Stephen?
Survivor.
Yeah. All right, Stephen Garrett, thank you so much. We are not taking questions from the audience, but we are going to welcome our next guest up, another frequent contributor to Book and Film Globe. He writes about television for us mostly. I always have a great time talking to him about television. Matthew Ehrlich is here.
Hi.
Hello, Matthew. Nice to see you. Nice to meet you. I've never met you in person.
I know. This is fantastic.
We've had several delightful conversations, and we're about to have another extremely delightful conversation about one of my favorite TV shows, Girls 5 Eva.
Girls 5 Eva booked a gig.
The Tonight Show. I just did mandatory sensitivity training, so let's do a side hug where none of our parts touch.
Hey. We are proof that it is never too late to follow your dreams.
They ate us up! Gonna be famous
5 Eva. I would say it's kind of from the Tina Fey TV Factory. She's not the creator. The creator is a woman named Meredith Scardino, I believe. But Jeff Richmond, who is married to Tina Fey, writes all the music. And this is a very music-heavy show.
Well, it's as if Tina Fey created an academy of comedy writers that she then presides over, and there are all these products that come out of the 30 Rock School or the 30 Rock playbook.
Yeah.
I don't know how much Tina Fey actually has to do with the day-to-day production of Girls 5 Eva, but it's very much, if you've seen 30 Rock or Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, it has that sensibility.
There, some of the same writers, like Robert Carlock, and some of the same actors. The guy who played Lutz on 30 Rock is a frequent side character.
Limo driver,
But this is a very female-centered show. Yeah. The premise of Girls 5 Eva is that there is a 90s girl group, a manufactured girl group, that has made a comeback in contemporary time, and now they're all middle-aged. And they are attempting to break away from the chains of their tyrannical manager, right?
Right. And also, I think it's a reflection on the fact that pop music from that era, from the aughts, is now being glorified. You know, Britney's being reexamined, Justin Timberlake's being reexamined, and those people were making hits back then and now are experiencing this, almost rueful look back at those times. The content of the songs that they wrote. There's a great song about, if my boyfriend cheats on me, I'm going to blame the woman.
Yeah, there's a lot of reference to how lurky and rapey a lot of the music from that era is, and there's a lot of making fun of the boy bands, NSYNC, New Kids on the Block, and later, and just a lot of mockery of that era's pop culture in general. You mentioned when we were messaging about this that you find you like the flashback songs that they do. They're extremely, it's like an entertaining look back at how stupid pop culture was.
Oh, yeah. Her Wiki's solo album, Yesternights, is great. I wish they would just release that.
You know, it's funny. I listened to so that's the thing is like Girls Five. There's a lot of songs in it. And I actually listened to their big hit on the show, which is BPE, which stands for Big Pussy Energy. Big Pussy Energy. I listened to that song, and it does not sound great coming out of the Alexa speaker. I'll say that. Like that song is better on the show. When you can see the women clowning around, but let's talk about the cast. Like the thing that makes Girls Five Eva so compelling is that the cast, the four women in the band. Well, the premise first of all is that there's one of the women dies, one of the original members of Girls Five Eva dies, and you've got four surviving members, and two of them are played by Sarah Bareilles, who is a pop star and a Broadway composer. An incredibly talented musical performer, and then Renee Elise Goldsberry, who is best known as playing Eliza in the original production of Hamilton,
right? And best known on television as playing the prosecutor in The Good Wife,
right? Big presence. I mean, a big presence.
And who knew she could do comedy?
She is hilarious in this, and Sarah Bareilles is terrific. And the other two members of surviving members of Girls Five, one of them is played by Busy Phillips, who has a long pedigree of high quality TV comedy work. And then Paula Pell, who's a comedy writer, she plays kind of it's hilarious because if you look at the flashbacks, like she was kind of like a sexy go-girl.
They have a different actress playing her.
Different actress. Yeah. But like in the show, she's like this big, stocky, white-haired lesbian dentist.
Who's gone to seed, yes.
Exactly. Who's gone to seed, and it has commitment. She has attachment issues to her hideous ex-girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah. So Sarah Bareilles plays Dawn, who is like a Brooklyn house mom.
Right.
Essentially, she's like running her family's Italian restaurant, and she has she and her husband have a kid. So there's lots of funny like Brooklyn mom humor in the show as well as all this great lesbian humor, and then
there's Florida humor with Summer.
Summer is Busy Phillips'
Busy
character.
Phillips, who is, one of these sort of Christian celebrities who's married to, now I can't remember his name.
He's married to Kevin.
Kevin,
a character
exactly.
named Kevin who's
Summer
like,
and Kevin,
it's
yeah.
a fake marriage. He's in a boy band. He's not gay.
Well, think he's gay.
He's gay-ish.
Right, yeah.
He's gay in his vibe, although there's talk that he...
As most Christian pop stars probably are.
Right. Yeah. And they have a sham marriage, and they're like a fake Instagram couple.
Right.
And what's their daughter? They have a daughter who's like a fake Instagram celebrity.
Oh, right. Yeah. Whose name is like Celexa or something.
Something ridiculous.
Some pharmaceutical.
They have that going on. And then Wiki, played by Renee Elise Goldsberry, is like a failed Beyonce.
Right, right, and she's kind of the Jenna Maroney character of the ensemble.
Right,
ridiculously self-absorbed, but very likable. But you're kind of laughing at her and laughing with her at the same time.
And what makes okay? Here's the deal: the show was on Peacock for two seasons and existed in total obscurity. I mean, I watched it.
I watched it. Yeah,
because I don't know. I don't know why. I like musical comedy. I don't know. I watched it, but then it moved to Netflix for season three, where it also is existing in total obscurity.
I feel like I hear people talking about it.
Maybe.
It's hard to tell what's going on.
Right, but it's not in the top 10. Mm. So let's put it this way. When I go on to Netflix, it's not, yes, it's on recently. My wife and I are watching it and having a good time. But it's not like Girls Five Eva is taking over the zeitgeist, but I love this show. I just think it's hilarious. Every episode is just... packed with jokes, and I don't like flashbacks, as I've discussed very often, but like 30 Rock style flashbacks work because it's like flashbacks to pop culture parody.
Right. Well, I would say that 30 Rock was probably arguably the last great network sitcom, and even though television has developed a great deal as we reach streaming, I think that people do miss that big network sitcom, even though while 30 Rock was on TV, no one was watching it, but everyone loved it.
Right. And people who love comedy loved it.
Right.
That's the thing. It's like that's a comedy person show because of the way it weaves together all the pop culture allusions and and it's just this big over the top wackiness. And I feel like Girls Five Eva is like pays tribute to that style of comedy, and it kind of moves it forward. Like I feel like you mentioned the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is also from this family, but That also, the show had a disturbing underlayer of childhood sexual abuse, which was the subject matter of the show.
Right.
This does not have that.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
This is a wacky, like 30 Rock, it's a wacky pop culture parody.
Right, but you have like that rapid fire joke delivery. You have lots of flashbacks. You have lots of references to fictional pop cultural moments. It really is very, it's very similar to 30 Rock in a way that we haven't seen a show in a
long
time.
Didn't you say you've been like writing down some of the song lyrics?
Oh yeah, yeah. My favorite is the fake John Cougar Mellencamp songs.
Oh wait, because they have to perform those because they're performing at a bar owned by like a conservative
right wing nut, and they have to sing songs that are these fake John Cougar Mellencamp songs, like, you know, peaking in high school and Cars and things like that.
Yeah. And the women are trying to make them up as they go along. The songs are every episode. Not only are there songs that the Girls Five Ever are singing and recording, they also have like these background songs that sort of describe their internal thought processes that are really good. But my favorite musical joke in the whole show is Renee Elise Goldsberry has been a performer since she was a child. And she just discusses how she actually got her start recording family-friendly versions of NWA songs.
Oh, right, yeah.
For Kids Bop.
No, that's actually Busy Phillips.
It was Renee Elise Goldsberry, because I remember, because unless Summer was black when she was a kid, this young African-American girl singing a song called Ducks Are Mean Geese. Ducks are mean geese coming straight to the playground. Yeah. And I was just like, and I just thought that was the funniest thing I'd seen in years.
That was great.
So that's Girls Five Eva. I mean, it gets a high recommendation from you.
Very high recommendation.
Yeah. And it's on Netflix, and their episodes are mercifully short.
Very, very easy to binge watch.
25 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's three seasons of six episodes. So, you know, that's
it's like a British television show.
It's exactly like it, and it's the rare TV show that leaves you wanting more. So just like this is the rare podcast that leaves you wanting more.
Exactly.
So that's Matthew Ehrlich, and we have talked about Girls Five Eva.
Thank you.
I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. And I am the host of this podcast, which appears on our website and also on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts, and is one of the most popular entertainment news podcasts in Albania. So for those of you, big shout out to our Albanian listeners and our Swiss listeners and our Polish listeners and our listeners in Papua New Guinea. Wherever you are in the world, you're enjoying this show. Thank you to Matthew Ehrlich. Thank you to Stephen Garrett. Thank you to Sea of Reeds Media for hosting a great week of shows here in New Jersey at the Bookhouse Long Branch and the Bookhouse Milburn. If you're in New Jersey, please stop in at one of these locations and buy many things. Don't buy just one thing. Buy a lot of things. And I hope that you keep perusing and patronizing your local bookstores, reading the site, and listening to the show. I will talk to you next week.
Thank you. Thank you, Neil.
Original production.